This is the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harold.
Welcome to another edition of the Paranormal Podcast. I'm Jim Harold. Thanks so much for your kind comments at iTunes and for listening to the show as always. We really appreciate it. You know, we're at the three-year mark now, and I've been trying to look for some different things, maybe some things that we've just neglected to cover. And we are in the month of Halloween, and I saw where there was a new book from Llewellyn on witchcraft. It's called Everyday Witch, A to Z, an amusing, inspiring, and informative guide to the wonderful world of witchcraft. And I said, we've never had a witch on the show. And I think it's about high time we do so. Tonight, we welcome Deborah Blake. She is the author of that book. She is a Wiccan high priestess who has been leading her current group, Blue Moon Circle, for a little over 4 years. She is author of Circle, Coven, and Grove, A Year of Magical Practice. That was published in 07 by Llewellyn. And now she has her second book, Everyday Witch, A to Z, an amusing, inspiring, and informative guide to the wonderful world of witchcraft, which has just come out. Deborah was also a finalist in the Pagan Fiction Award Contest, and her short story, Dead and Mostly Gone, is being featured in a Pagan Fiction Awards anthology. When not writing, Deborah runs the Artisans Guild, a cooperative shop she founded with a friend, and works as a jewelry maker, tarot reader, and an ordained minister, and an intuitive energy healer. She lives in a 100-year-old farmhouse in rural upstate New York. Deborah, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
You know, you almost can't contain within an hour all the stereotypes about witches.
That's so true.
But let's start from the beginning. How does one come upon leading a life of witchcraft?
Well, for most of us, sort of accidentally. It tends to be something most of the people that I know who are, would call themselves witches, have always had sort of the feeling that there was something about them, and eventually came to what we now call modern witchcraft, and which some people call Wicca, and said, oh, that's the name for that feeling. You know, what I like to say is that I've been a witch all my life. I only discovered, you know, 10 years ago that that's what you called it.
So can you tell us a little bit about your journey and specifically how you became a witch?
Oh, sure. I had a friend who kept inviting me to come to these, rituals at her house. And I'm not by nature a group person. And I kept saying, oh, you know, I don't want to go to these get-togethers with these people I don't know, most of whom are probably kind of weird. And she kept inviting me. And it, in fact, was on Halloween one year, what we witches call Samhain. And I finally went to this thing, and we had a little feast at the house, and then we went out into the park and cast this magical circle with, 40 people, most of whom I'd never met before, and suddenly I just felt like I'd come home. And many, many pagans will tell you that when they go to their first circle, that's what it feels like.
Now, there seems to be folks seem to equate witchcraft with evil, as far as assuming that maybe people who practiced witchcraft are Satanists and so forth.
That actually was political propaganda.
Okay.
If you believe it. The Christian religion came into Europe and basically took over from the existing pagan religions. And in the process, they tried to take over power, which of course, is how these things happen. And as we all know, history is written by the victors. And so what they did was, in order to take over power, they discredited the people who had been in power. And that's not to say that all the people who were in power were witches. They certainly weren't. But the pagan religions were supplanted by Christianity. And in order to take over power, they spread all this sort of malicious rumors, which have stuck around through to this day, even though most people don't know that that's how they started.
So when you take a look at Wicca, I know it's got to be incredibly hard to kind of put any kind of religion, an elevator speech for a religion, but if you can give us the high points and what it really means to be a Wiccan.
Well, for one thing, not all witches are Wiccans. All Wiccans are witches, but not the other way around.
Okay.
there are a whole lot of pagans, and that includes people like Native Americans and other folks who worship, say, God and goddess or multiple deities, which may or may not have anything to do with what we in America look at as sort of modern witchcraft. And there are plenty of witches out there who don't consider themselves to be Wiccans. Wicca is sort of a particular slant of witchcraft, which is the fastest growing religion in both the U.S. and Canada. In general, though, what you can say is that witchcraft is a nature-based religion, meaning that there's a big emphasis on the ties to nature and to natural things, that most people who are involved tend to worship either God and goddess both, or some of them just goddess, but not, you know, the male patriarchal figure that most of us grew up with. And the one real true rule, and there aren't a lot of rules, which is kind of nice, but the one rule that Wiccans in particular follow is called the Wiccan Reed, and it's, "An it harm none, do as ye will," which basically means you can do whatever you want as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else or yourself, which is where it gets tricky.
Now, so take us through the thing is that we all have these years of entertainment stereotypes, and it kind of turns out that you may have very well a witch living next door. The title of your book is Everyday Witch A to Z. So take us through maybe a typical day for a witch.
Well, I can certainly take you through my day, and I can show you a few places where I might do things a little bit differently from someone else. I can also tell you that of the women in my group, we have a nurse, we have a library professional, we have a couple of authors and craftspeople, but they are your everyday people. They're no different from anybody else. You know, I run a little shop, and it's not a witch shop, it's an artist shop. So when I start my day, what I tend to do is before I even get out of bed, I speak to the gods, and I don't have to do anything formal for that. I just say, gee, could you please send me the best day possible? And I ask for some specific things that I'm looking for out of my day. And then when I go to bed at night, I say thank you for all of the things. And to me, that's a courtesy. Witches tend to be very much in touch with their gods. It's not like you have to go into a church in order to have somebody else talk to them for you. Whether or not you have a high priest or high priestess, all pagans can speak to the gods themselves, and we often do. And I also try to be very aware as I walk through my day of what I'm putting out there. The whole thing about the secret, mm-hmm. That they made such a big fuss about,
yes,
that, very essential paganism, really. And I hate to burst their bubble or anything, but they didn't think of it. What you put out is what comes back to you is a very essential pagan rule of life. And in fact, some people in Wicca in particular call it the threefold rule and believe that what you put out comes back three times, meaning if you put out good stuff, it comes back to you three times. And if you put out nasty stuff, it comes back to you three times, which, incidentally, is why that whole evil witch stereotype mm-hmm. doesn't make a lot of sense. Because if you truly believe that what you put out is going to come back, you're not going to curse somebody. If I tried to give somebody warts, I'd be worried about getting hurt. So I'm not going to go out and do that sort of thing. And while there are certainly people who are willing to disregard the rules, and people who don't walk their talk, just as there are in any other religion.
Sure.
They're not the norm. Most of the witches that I know are actually much more aware of what they're putting out and therefore much less likely to do anything that's going to hurt anybody else. Sort of ironic, really.
It's a very interesting concept in regards, because there's always been this sinister stereotype out there. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting to hear that the idea of the threefold kind of karma of types.
Well, and yes, it's very much like that. Well, if you look at that stereotype of the of the crone, of that, you know, wrinkly woman with the beaky nose and the wart. Part of where that came from is, if we go back to looking at Europe and that whole transition, wise women were quite a power in, you know, in the countryside, in the villages, and they were usually herbalists, they were usually, you know, the healers, but they were people who were respected, and that was one of the groups that was maligned and attacked in order to shift that power to the place where they wanted it, which was the priests and the church. I don't know if the people who listen to your show realize this, but many of the churches in Europe were in fact built on pagan sites, sacred sites, because they wanted people to go to the churches, and the only way to get them to do that was to build them where the pagans wanted to be in the first place.
Now, when you talk about witchcraft, what do you know? There are gatherings of covens or people. What do mm-hmm. what do witches do when they get together?
Oh, we eat a lot. Well, first of all, there are essentially two different kinds of witches. There are the solitaries and there are the group witches. And mm-hmm. all witches do some solitary work, but there are some who are never in group things or very rarely in group things, either because they can't find a group near them or because they just by nature prefer to practice on their own. And this sort of image of witches gathering together is only semi-accurate, because I would say that probably, you know, two-thirds of the witches in this country are solitaries.
Interesting.
I don't happen to be one. I happen to be a group witch. And when my group gets together, for instance, we just got together for Mabon, which was the autumn equinox celebration. We usually celebrate the equinoxes and the solstices and things like that. And we gathered at the circle that's out in the barn, behind the barn, behind my house, and we had a bonfire. And we cast the circle, which meant we sort of sealed the area so that the magic would be contained and the energy would be contained. And we did a little bit of magic for getting rid of things in our lives that we didn't want anymore as a part of the harvest process for our own lives, getting rid of that leftover stuff. And then we did a little bit of work on intentionally bringing into our lives some things we did want to harvest. And then we shared cakes and ale, which is, you know, some form of bread usually, and not always ale. This happened to be juice, but something that helps to sort of bind you together as a group.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we were done with the ritual, we had the feast, which is the part we all really like.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
And what I was going and I keep I hate to keep and it just brings to mind how much of our thoughts on witches are based on entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep drawing back to, okay, casting a spell. My vision of that growing up as a kid, I always watched Bewitched. And,
right.
You know, Samantha would wiggle her nose and something would instantaneously appear. How do...
Oh, I wish.
Well, that's kind of what I thought. It didn't work quite like that. And that's my question. How does it work when you cast a spell and so forth? How does it work?
It's all about energy and intent. One of the things that we say about magic is that it is will made manifest, which basically what that means is that you're taking your intention, the thing that you want, and you're putting it out into the universe in as concrete a form as you can make it. One of the reasons why when witches do rituals, they have things like candles and herbs and stones and all of these other accoutrements, which you don't need. You can have a spell standing out in the woods, you know, stark naked if you should so desire. Too many bugs for me, but you know, some people like to do that. But all of that stuff helps you focus your will. And so much of what people see in the movies as part of ritual, including, you know, the costumes, which we call garb, and all of the rest of that, are simply tools to help a witch focus his or her will and to send that sort of thought and energy out into the universe as strongly as possible. And that's what you do. And then there's the other part of it, which is belief. And, you know, that's sort of a tricky thing to analyze. But essentially what you're saying is, I believe this is going to work, and therefore it works.
And speaking of it working, I don't know if you have any examples or just times that you've just been amazed with the results of casting spells and those types of
things.
Well,
I have really absolutely seen times when it works. Probably, you know, the easiest example is prosperity magic, and it doesn't work all the time, every time, and I've never yet gotten the lottery numbers or anything.
But we'll keep trying.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess you have to play the lottery in order to win the lottery.
That's true.
But you know, certainly I have done prosperity magic and asked for some kind of help, and within a couple of days had some unexpected opportunity show up, or, you know, a check from somebody that I thought was never going to pay me, or things like that. You know, it doesn't work all the time, every time. I think in part because you have to be open to the opportunities and paying attention when they come up, and sometimes you don't. And also, sometimes it just isn't time. You know, you may be asking for something that you think is what you need, and if the gods decide that's not what you need, you may not get it.
And actually, what you said about spells does very much seem to, you know, I read The Secret when it came out. It very much does seem to tap into that general notion.
Yeah, they swiped it from us. What I have read is that the awareness of this idea sort of cycles through society periodically, and they happen to be the people who brought it up and made a big deal about it at this point, at the same time that witchcraft was also on the rise and other people were being aware of it. My guess is it's some sort of an energetic shift in the world view or something. But yeah, it really is very much the same thing, that idea of really figuring out what it is you want and sometimes don't want, and putting it out into the universe. And sometimes you have to do it, you know, quite a bit. You know, if there's something really, truly important I'm working on, I sometimes will work on it every day for a month. You know, light a candle, say the same spell, whatever it is. And spells are essentially a way of verbalizing what it is you want in a concrete fashion. You know, that's, you don't necessarily have to have a formal spell. It just, again, adds that focus.
Are the idea of potions and things like that, is that just myth-making by Hollywood or writers,
no, exactly.
Or are there really potions?
No, there are such things. First of all, you know, as I said, a lot of these wise women, and probably wise men, were herbalists, and so sometimes you would get some sort of an herbal mixture that was meant to assist with whatever you were doing, whether it was meant to be ingested or not. We make herbal teas to relax now, and an herbalist might give you something like that while also giving you a spell to get you to chill out. But also, you know, certainly witches historically have used herbs as part of their magical work, and they sometimes get mixed into potions or made into incenses or thrown in the fire to burn. You know, we throw sage in the fire quite a lot because that's a good cleansing herb. So there is some basis in that truth. I mean, you know, the reason all of this stuff is so persistent is because most of it has some basis in truth. It just doesn't have a lot of basis. And then it just got sort of twisted out of proportion. Because let's face it, it's a whole lot more interesting to make a movie about an evil witch than it is about some woman who lives in upstate New York with a bunch of cats.
Very true.
Yeah, if they made a movie of my life, nobody would come see it.
Well, but I mean, your point is taken, that to sensationalize anything and make it scary and spooky
sure.
Sells a lot more, you know, maybe sells a lot more books or gets a lot more people to come to a movie. So that's the direction it goes in. You know, I've noticed even over the last 3 years of doing this show that the interest in the paranormal in general has gone up. It seems like that's been kind of echoed by the growth in Wicca and witchcraft. Why do you think people are turning to it at this particular point of history?
Well, I think there are a couple of things going on. One of them is that I think there is some sort of energetic shift going on, you know, a universal something. And my guess is, and this is just my theory, it's not based on anything, my guess is that the Earth is screaming for help, and one way to get that help is to get people more aware of things like Earth-based religions, where you respect the Earth and are more likely to treat her nicely, and, you know, that's one way to you know, possibly, you know, save the planet. You know, I also think that, you know, as there, you know, there is this increase in the ability to, you know, get information online and share information, you know, things are coming out that there was no way to share them before.
We're very aware of that on this show. I mean, it's just, it's a revolution.
It is. Viva la revolution.
After we get back from this break, we're going to really delve into the new book that Deborah Blake has just put out, Everyday Witch A to Z, an amusing, inspiring, and informative guide to the wonderful world of witchcraft. Next on the Paranormal Podcast, right after this. Hey, I just wanted to say thanks so much for some of the great reviews you've been putting up on iTunes. We're only at about 50 now, still quite a bit short of that leading skeptical podcast, but I know we're going to catch him. And I just thought I'd read some of the ones that we've gotten. They're fantastic. One here, excellent podcast, 5 stars. Jim Harold provides an open-minded approach to the paranormal in a well-polished professional manner. By far tops in paranormal podcasts. Another one here, I love this one. I've been listening to the Paranormal Podcast for about 2 weeks now, and I cannot put my iPod down. I subscribe to other shows about paranormal information, and I find yours is the best. Keep up the great work. Here's a good one. Yeah, he told me to write a review, so that's what I'm going to do. Definitely one of the best podcasts out there on any subject. Jim Harold is a marvelous host and always asks the right questions. Well, thanks so much for the kind thoughts, and we really do appreciate it, and we think it will help us get the word out to more and more people. And please tell your friends, connect with us on Twitter, MySpace, and at paranormalpodcast@gmail.com. Now, if you want to put in your iTunes review, but not been quite sure how to do it, there's help. Go to paranormalpodcast.com, scroll down actually below this show, and you will see a little instruction on how to submit a review to iTunes and a link that will open up your iTunes music software and put you right where you need to be. And with that, back to the show, and thanks again.
Back to the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harold.
Well, we're back on the Paranormal Podcast with Deborah Blake. She is the author of Everyday Witch A to Z, an amusing, inspiring, and informative guide to the wonderful world of witchcraft. During the break, Deborah, we were talking about how you kind of fell into writing. Kind of tell us how you became a successful and published author.
Well, what happened was I started my own group after having been in somebody else's group for 5 or 6 years. And went looking for a book that would be sort of a cushion for that first year of being a high priestess on my own, something that would maybe have a year's worth of new moon and full moon and holiday rituals and give me some hints on how to lead a group and what to do. And I couldn't find it. And so after I had led my group for a year, I sort of had this thought, well, gee, you know, this book really needs to be out there. And so I wrote it. And I wrote the first 4 chapters and sent them to Llewellyn with the table of contents and said, gee, what do you think about this? And they wrote back and went, we'd like to see the rest of the book. And there was no rest of the book. So I wrote it really, really fast, and they liked it and published it, and it came out and did pretty well. And at that point, I had sort of just done this as a one-off kind of thing, and it suddenly occurred to me that perhaps I had more to say. And, you know, now we've got the second book out, and in fact the third book is finished and will be out in May of next year, and they're working on the fourth book. So apparently it's a thing.
Wow. Well, congratulations on your success. So take us through this book. Give us the concept of Everyday Witch A to Z.
Well, to me, being a witch is not just about doing the rituals or casting spells or, you know, going to big festivals. It has to do with how you approach your everyday life. That's why the title, Everyday Witch. And what I wanted to do was sort of a little fun book, an overview of a lot of the various aspects of witchcraft and how just little summaries, sort of little mini essays. But there's also in the book a lot of what they call sidebars, which are just little fun things like helpful hints or elemental essentials or Witch 101, a lot of little cute tidbits of things, little mini spells. And this book was co-written by my cat, Magic. Yes, I kid you not, she has her own introduction and her picture in the back and everything. And in fact, if you've seen the book, you've seen that there are little black cats all over the book because she is a little black cat. I have five cats, but Magic, you got to be careful what you say, cats. She's the one who is very sensitive to things, and she actually does sit at the computer with me and supervise everything I do. And so also in the book there are little herbal hints from Magic and Magic the Cat simple spells, and also Ask Magic the Cat. We had people, write her questions and she answered them, not people, animals. For instance, there's Dear Magic the Cat, I heard my witch say that she wanted to lose weight, so I ate her dinner when she was at the room. Now she's mad at me and I don't know why. What's a familiar to do from Full, Fluffy, and Fargo? Dear Full, this misunderstanding was not your fault. Witches should know that when they put a request out into the universe, it may manifest in ways they didn't expect. She said she wanted to lose weight, and as long as you are snitching her food, she's sure to do that. Or else she'll learn not to leave food out where you can get it, in which case you will have helped you educate her. Either way, you're doing a great job as a familiar, and don't worry about her being mad at you. Just give her the sweet kitty eyes look, and she'll be putty in your paws. So yes, you can see that the cat has, her paws all over this book. And so, yes, it goes A to Z, as the title would say, and it starts with attitude, and it ends with, what does it end with? It ends with zest, because both of those things that are things that witches really have to have.
What is the witch's attitude?
I can actually read you that little bit, too. If you're a witch, you've probably got attitude. If you don't, I'll bet your witchy friends will help you find some. Attitude is that little extra bounce in your walk because you are getting a zing from nature, whether it is the shine from the full moon, the call of the coyote up on the hill, or the crash of the waves on the shore. Attitude is your secret smile that says you know a few things that most of the folks around you don't. Attitude is having a charm in your pocket, a chant on your lips, and faith in your heart. Attitude is being a witch and proud of it. So smile that smile, sweet witch, and make the most of who and what you are. But don't forget to stay just a little bit humble. After all, the gods are watching, and there is such a thing as too much attitude.
Well written.
Thank you. Well, I try and bring humor even to the serious things. I like to mix the inspirational and the amusing and useful information all together so that people don't realize they're getting information that, sort of sneaks up on them.
Now, who would you think should read this book? I mean, should it just be people who want to become a witch? Who would you say would be the audience for this book?
Are you kidding? I believe everybody should read this book. I get a percentage of each one that sells.
I was actually going to ask you this. Do you have, does the cat get a cut?
No. She does, actually. She gets paid in catnip.
There you go.
Yeah. I wrote the book for really all witches, because there are people who are just starting out and need lots of information. There are people who've been doing it for a long time and sort of need that little extra spark brought back to their practice. But I also wrote it for anybody who is interested, somebody like you who has all sorts of questions about things and just wants to sort of get their toes wet, get a little information without reading a big heavy tome on how to become a witch or something that has a whole lot of historical stuff or even something like my first book, which is mostly rituals, which is great for practicing witches, but doesn't necessarily do your average person any good. But this just gives you a bunch of sort of general information, so that if you're looking for, well, gee, how do you know, witches look at, for instance, motherhood, you look under motherhood, and it'll tell you.
Interesting. You know, a thought just occurred to me, and you're a very kind and nice person, and I was thinking about, you come off as absolute delight and a very nice person, and it occurred to me that maybe sometimes it's tough to be a witch, because sometimes maybe you're unfairly persecuted or stereotyped. What do you feel about that?
Well, I've been very fortunate. I really haven't run into a lot of problems. You know, every once in a while there's somebody who says something insensitive, but for the most part, I'm pretty well accepted, and I'm what we call out of the broom closet, obviously. yeah, you like that one?
Yeah, that's good.
But, you know, I mean, since I write books, it's pretty obvious, and I wear my pentacle openly, and fortunately, because I work with artists, I'm allowed to be a little bit freer than, say, you know, my friend who works in the school system, where you have to tread a little bit more carefully, because, in fact, you do still have to worry about persecution. And I've had friends who've run into problems with things like custody battles, where, in fact, they were told that they could not practice their religion around their children. You know, I mean, that's horrible. That's, you know, that's very un-American, really,
wow,
when you think about it. And yet, you know, some judge said, if you want your child to be in your house, you are not allowed to practice your religion where your child can see it, and they are not allowed to participate. And
wow,
that certainly is disturbing.
Wow, that is. What would you say to somebody, and obviously your book and your books are our starting point, but if somebody is interested in witchcraft, in addition to reading your books, what else would you suggest?
Well, there's a lot of information online, although as with everything else online, you have to sort of pick and choose and you know, watch out for the crazy people. There are also an awful lot of really good books out there, many of them put out by Llewellyn, who's my publisher, but also there are a few other publishers, Wiser, New Page, a couple of other people who do really good things. And so I would go to, you know, your local Barnes & Noble and, you know, thumb through some of the books in the New Age section and find something that appeals to you. There's a person no longer with us, unfortunately, named Scott Cunningham, who wrote a great many very readable, very basic introductory books on witchcraft, and he's a good place to start. He wrote Wicca for the Solitary Practitioner, which is sort of everybody's go-to book. You know, that's one that most people start with. So after you've gone out to buy Everyday Witch A to Z, I would suggest that one. And also, you can, if you look in your local newspaper, or if you look up on the, you know, the board of maybe, you know, a local health food store or places like that, sometimes you can find a notice for an open ritual. In many communities, there's somebody who will, in fact, put on rituals that the community is invited to. I've done a number of those here. Often the local Unitarian Church is very open to witches and allows them to do open rituals there. And so if you're curious, as long as you take an open mind and an open heart, you know, you're certainly welcome to go to one of those and you might learn something.
And if you had something to say just to the general public out there about Wicca or witchcraft, one kind of parting thought, what would that be?
I guess just that witches are people just like everybody else. We love our families and our friends, and we work hard, and we contribute to society in positive ways. And I hope that, you know, anybody who has some negative stereotypes still floating around in their heads will, you know, make the effort to find out, you know, what the truth really is. And if they happen to meet an everyday witch, that they sit down and have a chat and see what's really what.
Well, it's certainly been a pleasure to meet you tonight, and thank you for coming on the show. How can people find out more about the world of Deborah Blake, your books, and what's going on?
Well, I do have a website. It's www.deborahblakehps, which is short for High Priestess, .com. Or you can find me on MySpace under Deborah Blake HPS. And I also have a very long and complicated email. If people have questions for me, they can contact me at magicmysticminerva@yahoo.com. Those are three of the cats. And you can get to that through the two websites as well. There's also, if you go to Amazon, I have a little blog on Amazon, and I have a couple of blogs floating out in the blogosphere places, which you can find through my website as well if you want to keep up with what's going on with me.
Well, what we'll do is we'll make sure that we put links on the post to your website and to your books on Amazon.com, so hopefully people can check them out.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I would like to add that I hope that everybody runs out and gets the Pagan Anthology of Short Fiction. This is a thing that Llewellyn sort of went out on a limb with. You know, they don't do a lot of fiction work, and it's got some amazing stories, and they aren't just, you know, for or about witches. It's just a whole bunch of very interesting things. You know, some of them are set in places like the Old West, and there's sci-fi kind of things and fantasy kind of things, but they all have a pagan slant of one kind or another. And not only is my story in there, but there's a whole lot of other really, really wonderful stuff, and I hope that people will go out and take a look at this.
And we'll also put a link up to that. One last question that occurs to me. We are in October, approaching Halloween, and you had used a different term for Halloween. What does that mean to witches, and what do you do on Halloween?
Actually, this is probably our most important holiday of the year. It's our new year, the witches' new year, and it is both the end of the old year and the beginning of the new year. And many of the traditions of Halloween actually came from Samhain, which is this Celtic holiday that pagans celebrated for years. The witches and the ghosts and all of that. We believe that the veil between our world and the world beyond is at its thinnest on this night, which would explain things like ghosts and all of the rest of it, and that you can speak to those who have gone on already, or, you know, your ancestors, people you've lost. This is a time when witches say goodbye to anybody that they've lost in the past year, pets included, or, you know, ask their ancestors for advice. They let go of things that they don't need in their lives anymore. And then they sort of open themselves up to the next year and to hopefully, you know, whatever good things there are going to be. It's a holiday that is both dark and light at the same time. It can be very sad and also very hopeful, very deep, and also a great celebration. It's a wonderful night, and it's also a wonderful night to sort of reach out and touch other witches, because we all share this great feeling.
Well, again, thank you so much for coming on the show and setting the record straight on some of those stereotypes and giving a little more education and information to the audience.
Well, thank you for having me. And, you know, if you get a whole bunch of questions, I'd be happy to come back and answer them.
And we'd be glad to have you back on. And thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. As always, we appreciate it very much. During the month of October, our goal is to put out a couple of shows every week. So hopefully you'll have your iPod full of paranormal podcasts as we go through this Halloween season. Until next time, I'm Jim Harold, and you have been listening to the Paranormal Podcast. Good night.